flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good morning, Chicago. It is February flipping first, man. February 1st, which means we're pretty much in season. We're always in season here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey with you. February 1st, pitchers and catchers. My two favorite words, Bruce. Pitchers and catchers. 8 days away, my friend. 8 days away from the Chicago Cubs reporting in Mesa on Super Bowl Sunday. Jam-packed show. We're going to give you the pitching coaches of both teams. Ethan Katz, Tommy Hotovy, slated to join us. We're going to talk about the Cubs' new seating section and what that means for the team and how you can get a new way of seeing the game in the bleachers at Wrigley Field. We're going to talk about all the rumors. Alex Bregman continues to be a topic every single week.
Rumors here, baby.
Not inside
the clubhouse.
Everything here is truth.
Go everywhere else for the rumors. We talk about what's going on.
312-644-6767. Bruce, good to see you. Pitchers and catchers, my friend. We are staring it in the face.
Week from today, take off for spring training after the show. Cubs open on February 9th. White Sox on the 12th. There is excitement in the air because Jed Hoyer and his front office are continuing to look at how to improve a team from being 10 games down in their division against the Milwaukee Brewers to the clear-cut favorite and a 90-win team, as the manager insisted they need to be at the end of last year. So with all that in mind, 312-644-6767. Hop in anytime. We want your thoughts. They're valued here on Inside the Clubhouse every week, the entire show from 9 to 11. Let's start with Bregman. Where is Alex Bregman at? He has been in baseball cyberspace for the last 3 months trying to get himself a long-term deal. One of the better third basemen in the game over the last 6 years. Played on two world championship teams, is known as a good power hitter, a terrific third baseman, a great base runner, an outstanding teammate. He'll be the first to be in the clubhouse, the last to leave. The problem is he doesn't have the long-term contract that he wants at this point in time.
All right, so let's talk about this. So whether it's Alex Bregman, Dylan Cease, there's a lot of names lining up for the Cubs here. There's fans thinking, hey, look, you guys are saying the Cubs can't sign Alex Bregman. Then there's other reports out there saying that the Cubs and Blue Jays are, you know, they're shaking things up and they're going to make it interesting here in the coming weeks. All right. So with all that being said, you know, we had Jed Hoyer in the final year of his deal. All right. We've talked at length all offseason. All we've talked about is 90-win team. Tom Ricketts talked to us at Cubs convention and said, excuse me, it's about getting in the dance. that if you just get in the dance, that's all that matters, because anyone can go from there. Anyone can win from there. So put all that in the blender, Bruce. What is the Cubs' philosophy heading into 2025? Is it winning 90 games? Is it winning the World? Is it World Series or bust? Where are we?
Win now.
Okay.
So your two most important acquisitions of the offseason are one-year guys, okay? Tucker and Wright, one of the better right fielders, players in the game. And now you have a closer in Presley, who wasn't a closer last year because they had brought in Josh Hader to the Houston Astros. He was the setup man. He had been the closer on a championship, world championship team before that. So it's all about one-year contracts and winning, okay? Winning. Could Bregman be another 1 to 3 year contract for the Chicago Cubs?
So let's talk about what the contract looks like for Alex Bregman. It's not 5 or 6 years.
I don't think the Cubs are signing another 6 year deal at this point in time.
Okay.
So what it might look like is, use your imagination. It can be a 1 to 3, exactly like a Cody Bellinger deal last year. Okay. 1 year. Second year is player opt-out, third year is player opt-out, or mutual options with buyouts, okay, mm-hmm. Second and third year. Could they be creative? Look, Scott Boras is one of the most creative, powerful agents in the history of the game. Could they come up with a new format for Bregman that gives you 4 option years for both the club and the team? Opt-outs or mutual options, or mutual options with buyouts. Anything is possible right now, I think. But the player getting the money he wants for this year, possibly for the other years, and the flexibility to have an awesome year in 2025, and moving on to another 5-year deal with somebody else for what he considers guaranteed money. These are all things that are probably on the table and have been discussed by the Cubs. Look, Hoyer's been tremendously creative here in getting his 2025 team up to the level of being a championship contender, and he's not done yet. We're talking about Bregman. We're talking about Cease. We're talking about a closer named Robert Suarez with San Diego. These are all things that they're still on the table, still being talked about.
All right. So a couple things with Bregman, and really any of these guys, but specifically Bregman, when you're talking about creativity and contracts, that type of contract to me would still, I think you're still 4 weeks away from something like that, that we get into spring training. Kind of like they did with Cody Bellinger. I think he was signed on February 27th of last year. He's going to wait for the guaranteed money. Maybe it's a team he doesn't want to go to. Maybe he's not interested in a team that's going to give him the money, yet he looks at the organization and is like, you know, is this just me taking my money and then just going through the motions for 5 years and never winning? Or does he look at a team like the Cubs saying, all right, they don't have the 5-year guarantee. This is kind of me betting on myself. He could probably talk to Cody Bellinger. I'm sure he has in this situation. And they get together. And then I want to throw another one at you. How does 2027 and the work stoppage that's pending play into all of this?
It's called lockout language.
Okay.
Lockout language is probably something that Juan Soto has in his contract, where he signed this humongous $700 million deal. And on top of that, the language for what would be a year where this collective bargaining agreement is dealt with in 2027, and the possibility of missing time that year because of no agreement, lockout language would either guarantee or not guarantee a player his salary during a period of time where baseball was not being played. And that's, in the case of Soto, you know, it's how much money are we talking about? You know, $50 million a year.
Right.
So it's significant. And I think a lot of the contracts that have been signed over last year and this probably have a lockout language in it. And I think the agent, the player, and the teams are going to be very reticent to admit or talk about lockout language being in contracts.
And then there's the Dylan Cease report this week that J.P. Morosi was saying that the Cubs have checked in and had recent conversations on the former White Sox and former Cubs prospect It'd be kind of fun to bring him back to Chicago and right the wrong for the Cubs here in his final year. Bruce and I were going through some of his ranks the last 5 years, and I'll share some of those. 312-644-6767. Is this a possibility, Bruce? What does that trade look like? We've seen some reports that the Padres are asking for the moon and they're asking for Matt Shaw. That's not abnormal. A team should ask for the best possible players. Matt Shaw is not going in a deal for a one-year rental of Dylan Cease. And if that's the price, it won't be here. It won't.
So the more realistic deal is Justin Steele for Dylan Cease. Why is that more realistic for San Diego? Okay. San Diego already, Dylan Cease is one of the top six pitchers in baseball right now. Innings, strikeouts, durability, all prove that that is the case. Steele has 2 years left on a contract. This year he's making $6.6 million. Cease is making $14 million. San Diego is right in the middle of a crisis money-wise where they're having trouble coming up with money. The ownership is fighting. Is there infighting going on in ownership to see who ends up controlling that team? So A.J. Preller, the president of baseball operations, general manager there, needs to stealthily try to win a World Series and at the same time dump money, okay? And with this, he would save somewhere around $7.5 million in a trade like Cease for Steele. Why would you trade Steele with 2 years left and Cease only 1 year left? And you're trying to win a World Series in 2025.
Yeah, and look, at some point you got to talk extension about Justin Steele. So Bruce threw this at me before the show, full disclosure here, and he said, would you trade 2 years of Steele for 1 year of Dylan Cease? And I answered immediately, no. And then I started doing a deep dive, and I love Dylan. But then I started looking, and I was like, damn, Bruce, he just goes out there and pitches. He makes every start, and he hasn't missed one since being called up as a rookie in 19.
Say that again.
Has not missed a start since coming up in July of 2019.
So he is the third most durable starter since 2019.
I'll say this. I got some numbers for you. He's first. He's tied with Sean Manaea in starts. First in starts since 2020.
Right.
Since 2019 because he came up in half the year. He's third in the majors. This is not in the American League. This is not in the National League. First in the majors in starts. Third in strikeouts. Seventh in wins, ninth in innings, and 12th in ERA. That's since that's 5 seasons, folks. Not one, not three. That's 5 years.
And pitched the most innings of his career last year, 189 plus.
So when you put all of that in a blender and then you compare it to Justin Steele, who's an absolutely fantastic pitcher, you know, all-star in 2023, finished fifth in the Cy Young. But when you look at the durability of Dylan Cease and then the power pitcher, Bruce, that's the thing.
There you go.
He's lights out, 10-plus strikeouts a start, right. And so that's something the Cubs don't have.
So the Cubs have, on paper, really good starting pitching.
Yeah.
No power arm, as you said, right? The average fastball for a Cubs starter is 92.3, okay? This guy's, you know, consistently 95, you know, sometimes topping out, you know, years ago, you know, 2-3 years ago, maybe 97, 98. It's really not all velocity. So there's velocity in his fastball. There is an unbelievable spin in his slider, one of the best sliders in the game of baseball. And just overall what a power pitcher is, okay? We're not just – most people mistake power pitchers for being guys that just throw 98, 99. No. It's the power stuff. And we're going to be talking to two pitching coaches today, Tommy Hotovy of the Cubs and Ethan Katz of the White Sox, about what power pitching really is beyond just the overall velocity.
630 asks, are the Cubs better with Cease over Steele straight up? I mean, looking at these numbers, I think so.
Well, not only that, but the
not much. I'm not saying
the variety of a three-game series, right? Most of them are three-game series. So you have Cease, you have Imanaga, right? And then you have your choice. So who's your third guy in the rotation? Okay, who's the next guy coming up? The point is, in that series, you're going to see different type of stuff pitchers that are off the chart, right?
Yeah,
Imanaga, Cease. You know, you're going to Tyone. You're going to have all your other starting pitchers that are out there. It gives the hitter pause. It gives the preparation before each game in the hitting meeting, pause as to, this guy, it's not the same velocity. It's not the same release point. It's a right-hander, not a left-hander. It's just a different look. There's nothing wrong with Justin Steele. He's a really good pitcher, and he's probably going to even get a little bit better as the next couple of years go on. The point is, for what you're trying to do this year, win and win big, is Cease a better pitcher to have in your rotation?
I mean, the answer is yes. Here's what Justin Steele, also older by like 6 months. I mean, he seems like a young pitcher, but they're basically the same age. I'm going to give you the last 3 years of both pitchers here. Okay, Dylan Cease has got he's made 98 starts. Justin Steele's made 78 starts. Dylan Cease has a 13 WAR. Justin Steele has a 7.7. Dylan Cease 665 strikeouts, and Justin Steele has 437. I mean.
Right.
Those numbers are overwhelmingly better. And,
but, I mean, it's not there's nothing wrong with Steele.
No.
You'd like to keep him.
And
right?
that's what this texter says right now. Why get rid of Steele? Why not have both diehard Cub fan who's tired of the shell game? And I get it, because that's the fan side of me saying, I'm in with you, the 6-3. I am. Why not line them up and go Cease,
but
Steele in 1 and 2? And then you know what the Padres are saying? Why are we giving up Dylan Cease for whatever you want?
Because you have contract control for 2 years at half the price. Yeah. And the Padres are in the midst of trying to win and also cut payroll at the same time.
Well, can't you? I would be more willing. Can we deal two of the Cubs' top 100 prospects or one of the Cubs' top 100 prospects?
It's not going to help the Padres win. You're trading one of the top pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, and they're trying to cut payroll while winning because of what they have invested in the guys they have there.
Right.
It's a slippery slope. I understand why this upsets people. Like, why trade Steele for Dylan Cease? I mean, the numbers are overwhelmingly in Cease's favor. I'm more inclined to say, and I'm going to ask Tommy Hotovy this, and we can talk to him about it. Would you rather have that back-end power bullpen, Bruce, where you make the game shorter 7, 8, and 9, so that's where Suarez comes into the conversation?
I know his answer.
Or would you rather have Dylan Cease in a front-loaded rotation?
I know his answer.
Okay.
Both.
Hi, Tommy. What
Both.
And then, okay, but this is an either-or question. This is what's frustrating. Why can't you have both?
I would say if you can get a power arm like Dylan Cease, you have to go. You have to do that.
So you're Cease over Suarez.
I would say the Cubs can win either way.
Got it.
I really think so, because if you bring in Suarez, who hits 102, averages somewhere between 98 and 100, again, another one-year deal fits in with their plan in 2025. You know, one-year wonders. They need that this year. And then you have a bullpen like the 2014-2015 Kansas City team that won two pennants and one World Series, where you have shutdown pitchers in 7th, 8th, 9th, guys that could close for other people that are pitching the 7th and 8th inning for you and the 9th inning with either Suarez or Presley. You're living large. I mean, that is the world that we live in right now, baseball-wise. You know, dominant bullpens. Will the starting pitching be as good as it was last year with the ballpark blowing in all the time? They're not counting on that. Cubs are not counting on their starting pitching being as good as it was. And therefore, they've been addressing and trying to handle the starting pitching and pitching overall differently in this offseason.
All right, so I'm going to scratch that question to Tommy Hotovy because Bruce just role-played very well there. Plenty to talk about. We didn't even mention that Ryan Pressly, which on the show last week we said it was all but done. It is done. He met the media. We're going to talk about Ryan Pressly and more. There's a couple of comments here pouring in that I'd like to ask Bruce specifically about Bregman and deferred money. But we got to hit a break here on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz coming up at 9:35. This is 670 The Score.
Playing for the Chicago Cubs, a pretty historic franchise, and then you get to go pitch in Wrigley is, you know, something that I've always wanted to do. I mean, even as a little kid, you know, watching Rookie of the Year and stuff like that, you never think that you're going to be able to have a chance or an opportunity to do it, and, you know, it came about, and, you know, having a lot of long, hard conversations with family and friends, you know, so... It was tough to make this decision, probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever made. But, you know, I think, you know, playing in Chicago has kind of always been a dream of mine, and I'm excited to get out there and put on a Cubs uniform.
That's new Cubs closer Ryan Pressly, who met the media earlier this week after the trade went final, after he had to waive his no-trade clause. Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. And Bruce, look, like that spot is solidified. He did say during that press conference that the Cubs have told him he is their closer, but he's willing to do whatever.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, really? He said. Cubs said I was the closer, but I'll do whatever. You didn't hear that?
No, okay. I didn't.
All right, well, then fine. He's not the closer. Now, he's solidified the back end of that bullpen.
What I heard in the press conference was that I'm going to have to go to spring training and fight for it. Yeah.
Well, that's what you want to hear. Even though that guy's veteran, you don't want to be handed anything. I do like that some people were, I don't know, some fans were kind of annoyed. It's some of the reaction I was seeing on social prior to him making this decision to waive his no trade clause. But that's the family aspect that that people don't understand. He's got kids, wife, he's home in Texas. He's got friendships, family, et cetera. And then the money part of it is...
He didn't have to waive it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And then
he called players on the Cubs and that have played for the Cubs and talked about it.
So had some tax experts work on this. And in Texas, you don't pay state tax. No state tax in Texas. Illinois, you do. The difference is $500,000 for the 280 days that he works in Illinois. Why 280? Because, or 284. 284 because you play 81 games on the road, okay?
Yep.
You're in another state. If you work, whether you're a baseball player or anyone else, if you work in other states for anything more than a day or two, you have to declare... you have to pay taxes in those states for when you work. That's what baseball players have to do. So 81 games out of the year, they have to pay tax from out of Illinois. But the 280, they're on the hook for Illinois. The assumption here is that the Cubs made that up to him to the tune of about $500,000.
Yeah, really good info there. It's more than just simply saying, yes, I want to come play for the Cubs. 312-644-6767. Let's sneak in a call here. Joe in St. Charles, welcome to Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey.
Morning. I love your show. I think the Cubs should go for it because anybody to beat the Dodgers is going to have to catch them in the right week. And they're going to have to catch lightning in a bottle, too. So whatever they think, let's rock.
Okay.
All right, so Joe's in for the Dylan Cease trade. He's saying whatever you think it's going to take to get in.
Bregman, Cease, you know, why stop, right? Depends on how much your farm system you want to move, right?
But I don't think you're going to have to move much of your farm system in order to bring in Dylan Cease.
Maybe if we're not right about conversations about whether it's steel or not,
sure,
they'd probably want guys like Casey back, who they traded to the Cubs in 2020.
Let me ask you, would you do like a Javier Assad, Owen Casey for Dylan Cease?
Yeah, like yesterday.
Right, me too.
Right.
100%. pretty much anybody not named Matt Shaw, I'm in on. The Justin Steele one's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But it's we've discussed it at length. I do think there are people like Joe saying, you know what, to hell with it. We've seen 83 and 79. We need to be back in the dance. And if you need to beat the top dogs, do whatever you can creatively to make it happen.
The Cubs are going after more bullpen help for sure. I mean, Brazier, as you and I talked about in pregame preparation for the show, was released by the Dodgers. One of the top pitchers last year in the bullpen in baseball. I see you pulling up his numbers right now. From what I understand, they're talking to Brazier already, having been let go of by the Dodgers. They had a DFA him to put in Yates. So, again, the rich can't hold on to every great player. They have 40 great players, and they had to let one of them go.
It's crazy. I mean, Brazier, the last two seasons with the Dodgers in like 68 games, he had an ERA of under 1 in 23 with the Dodgers. He had an ERA last year of 3.5, a whip of under 1 both of those seasons, and he's the odd man out. But that's just when, like you said, the rich get richer. Right. Look at that bullpen. Kopech might be pitching in the sixth inning.
Right. Not a ton of innings last year for Brazier.
No, he was banged up 28 innings.
Yeah.
And he only pitched 38 the year before for the Dodgers.
Again, if you're a Cub fan, you should feel really good about what they're doing here and their attempt not to be mediocre, but to be really outstanding and be a serious playoff team. As the caller said, it's the Dodgers and everybody else, but you have to be ready.
The Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest is easy to enter. Just download the Odyssey app, log in, and listen to the score each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry for a chance to win this unforgettable trip for four during the first weekend of the tournament in March. Stay at Circa Resort Casino, where you can visit the biggest March hoops party at Stadium Swim. Airfare also included, plus $20,000 to fund the ultimate viewing experience in Vegas. Bruce and I are entering that contest. We're going to flip the script, talk some White Sox. Ethan Katz, the great pitching coach for the South Side, will join us next on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey at 670 The Score.
3-2. And he got him. Cannon went upstairs with the heat for his second strikeout.
This is a good battle by Duran, and Jonathan, at the end of the day, won it. Some high heat. It's in the zone.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
John Schriffen and Steve Stone on the call last year, and a Jonathan Cannon start. We had Jonathan Cannon on the program last year. Probably the leading contender for opening day starter with the White Sox as we await pitching coach Ethan Katz from the Chicago White Sox, Bruce. And, you know, you're going to Cubs spring training in a week. The White Sox spring training, they report about 4 or 5 days later. It's going to be a much different look and feel on that side of town than it will be on the north side.
Yeah, but much more energized, I think, than last year, because there's true talent that they've gone out to acquire that they're developing within their system. There's excitement about the two best young left-handed pitchers in baseball in the minor leagues, you know, starting out this year. That's if both Schultz and Smith start in the minor leagues. We don't know. I mean, we're assuming they will. But maybe we shouldn't assume right now. I mean, again, a lot of people are saying, you know, Noah Schultz should be top of the rotation pitcher for the White Sox in 2025. Why not?
Well, maybe he will be, but maybe it won't come early. Maybe it'll be on the back half of the year. But let's ask the guy who might know some of the answers to these questions. Now joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline, the great pitching coach of the Chicago White Sox, Ethan Katz. Download the Circa app today. Ethan, thanks for joining us this morning. Good to talk to you as always.
Yeah, great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've been talking. We had Jonathan Cannon on last week, and you know, we've both gotten to know him over the last year, and we were talking about just reporting at spring training, what the look and the feel of it's going to be like coming off of last year, and knowing that what Chris has been able to do with the roster turnover and the prospect haul that they've gotten, obviously for Garrett Crochet. How's it going to be for you? You're walking into maybe a different type of spring training than you've had in the past with all of this young pitching talent around you, kind of maybe tabling wins and losses for now and working on developing some of these guys, as there's a lot of excitement about what you have in that rotation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of excitement with all those young guys. We had some some guys last year that were in the big leagues take some big steps forward, and obviously there's probably going to be some new faces this year, but the talent level is high, and we're looking forward, we're all looking forward to kind of getting this going and get spring training rolling.
Ethan, thanks again for joining us today. Ryan and I were talking about the fact that you have the two top-rated young left-handed pitchers in the minor leagues in baseball, in you know, with Smith, you know, part of that as well. What do you look at as far as the ascension of both of them moving to the major leagues this year? I know it's not all your call, but they're going to be relying on you and Bannister and your opinions as to when it's time to get them to the major leagues. How do you gear that?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about two uber talented arms. I got to see him throw last week in person down at the stadium, and it's impressive. But you know, the one thing you have to really be mindful, like Smith has a bigger workload from what he did last year. Noah, not as much, but can they pitch at the big league level? Absolutely. But I think when you're talking about both these guys and their development, you know, one thing that in the big leagues, you're looking at a 5-day rotation. And sometimes they get a 6-day, not that much, but these guys haven't done that. You know, Smith was on a 7-day in college. Noah's been on like a 6-day. Sometimes a 7-day with how the minor league schedule is, which is kind of not really conducive to the big league level. So kind of getting those guys dropping down from 7 to 6 more frequently and trying to do a 5 and seeing how they recover, that's a big thing. You know, they're not going to get as much rest. And how do they recover and how do they bounce back? Because that's super important. You know, can they get outs in the big leagues? Sure. But if they go to the big leagues and all of a sudden they're not recovering, we could really break these guys down in a way that, you know, we don't want to hurt them. So we just got to be strategic. We got to be smart. You know, the front office will, when the timing's right, the timing's right. So that's something we have to really talk about and consider.
How do you navigate the excitement of, and you're caring about what's going on in Chicago once the season starts, obviously, but when you have guys that are that talented, that touted, and let's just say, let's fast forward to first week of June, and they're on that, you know, 5-day trajectory. They get it. They're starting to kind of put starts together back to back to back, and you're sitting there going, man, like, look, he's dealing. You got Noah down there throwing 5 innings, 7 strikeouts. You got Hagen down there throwing 5 innings, 6 strikeouts. How do you navigate the, you know, excitement and the want of bringing a guy up? Also, while saying, hey, you know what? Let's let him have that success and feel down there before we even mess with the idea of just getting him up here because we want him up here.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, you're talking about these guys going to, you know, for Smith, he's going into a different level of competition, right? He pitched in the SEC, which is, you know, a very, very respected college level, but it's going to be a whole other animal. Noah taking another step forward in the competition he's taking. You know, it's when the timing's right, I think everybody will know, you know, what we were able to do with Garrett last year with a smaller workload and him getting through the finish line and being strong. You know, that was huge, you know, so I think we have a better idea if the timing's right and we do want to take these steps, how to be able to manage these guys a little bit better based on what we were able to do with Crochet.
Ethan, following up on just what you were talking about there, did the Crochet year of 140 innings and the fact that he'd only thrown 79 in his career up to that point kind of be, could that be a jumping off point for baseball people to not quite get hung up in that, well, he hasn't thrown enough innings for us to start him at 130, 140, 150 innings this year? Was that an outlier because of Crochet and just the monster strength and way he went about his job? Or could that be a jumping off point for teams going, you know what, we can baby these guys to the point where we never get enough innings out of them. They never get to 100.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, right? I know, you know, going back when I was in the minor leagues and coaching, I know the Dodgers with Urias did everything they could to protect him, to make sure nothing went wrong with him, right? And, you know, he broke down. And so I think it's a lot of it is just feel. A lot of it is really paying attention to, like, where their strength levels are, how are they responding, you know, that the communication that me and Crochet had on a daily basis was significant, just to make sure, like, okay, today this is what we need to kind of do with the throwing. Okay, now let's scale back. Okay, your bullpens, we've been throwing about 25 pitches. Let's really keep this down to 15. Like, maximize the moment. And we don't need high intensity, you know. So I think it's just kind of being able to really be smart, seeing what the player's doing, understanding the player itself, and, like, how, you know, Crochet works his tail off, you know, and that what he was able to do is a tribute to him last year. But I think you just have to be very strategic, very smart, and when you see those red flags, you got to be ready for it. And yet, they might need a day or two to be able to kind of rebound, you know.
I don't think you, Bannister, and the organization got enough credit for getting him to that point. And again, our job's not to blow smoke at you, but also to inform the fans about how incredible that was in a modern era to get this guy from zero, basically zero, 25 innings to 140, not only 140, but 140 quality innings. It's just... You know, it stood out to me. But again, back to what I had said to you, guys are going to blow out anyways. Guys are going to get hurt. You're not in the business of getting them hurt. But you're also, there is no proof that not throwing guys will ever get them to where they need to be in their career.
Right, I agree with that. I think you just have to be really. You got to listen to the player, right? Like, you got to see their day-to-day work, the way they're throwing the ball. Like, when they play catch on the field, like, the smallest details will kind of make you understand where they're at. And, you know, that's where I'm very hands-on, and I'll go up to talk to the player and be like, hey, where are you at today? You know, this is what I'm seeing. And hearing what they have to say, you know, working with medical and strength and conditioning to kind of, okay, where is he at in the gym? Is he still putting out performance, or is he, like, tapering down? You know, all these things from a strength level, you just have to really factor in, and you got to work together with everybody to kind of make the best decisions.
With White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz for a few more minutes here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Ethan, I think you're with your, wait, is this your third manager now in the short time you've been with the White Sox? And, you know, there's a kind of a two-part question here, and this is with all due respect to those who have come and gone. What's the challenge been like for you to have, you know, a different manager three different times? And are you maybe more inclined and more lined up with how this new staff is going to be with Will Venable and his history and long resume and the analytical department, and how you guys can kind of all work hand in hand together? Do you feel like that you're lined up and more aligned with this group and this this new manager and staff?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that, like, with all my experience of coaching in the minor leagues, you typically get a new manager, a new face every year. So you get different personalities, right? I've been fortunate to pretty much gel with everybody I've been with. So my conversations with Will has been great right now. I think he's going to be a player coach and a manager, I should say, and everybody's going to come together. He really cares about our process and how we even go into the first day of spring training and all the details that are really important, and really hearing what the player has to say. So I think it's going to gel really well. I really do like our coaching staff as a group. We all energetic, get along. So it should be a lot of fun. And we're all looking forward to kind of just getting this thing going and really getting to know one another on the day-to-day basis as well.
The idea of bringing Martin Perez in because he can still be a quality starter, and then the old media thing that we put on, and he can be a leader and teacher to the young pitchers. We've seen that work sometimes, and we've seen that go the opposite direction under your watch as well, where, you know, some veteran pitchers have been valuable to that, and then there's been the guys that turned out to be selfish and just cared about themselves and brought the whole team down. From your perspective, when you get a veteran pitcher, what are your expectations of a guy like Martin Perez?
The first thing I try to get a background. And luckily, I know both the pitching coaches he had last year. So I had a really long, in-depth conversation with both of them just to kind of know him a little bit more. But I remember meeting him in Texas a couple years back. He was talking to Jose Ruiz, and they were in the outfield, and I was just walking to the bullpen, and we started talking for a little bit there. I talked to Ruiz afterward, and he was like, "Oh, this great guy." And everyone I've talked to has raved, you know, the person, the makeup. And then talking to him a couple days ago to kind of see where he's at, when we ended our conversation about everything, he wanted to make sure, you know, he wanted me to know that, like, hey, I'm here to help these younger guys too. So please lean on me, and I want to do whatever I can to help. It's always having guys like him that have done it, been successful. It makes it, you know, especially with the group that we have right now, they are a very hungry young group that are always searching to learn and learn from one another, watching each other's outings. And I think they're going to really take a lot away from him, just about how he goes about his business, listening to the people that have been around him before. And I also think they're also going to be able to also see how he prepares and what they do behind the scenes, because they're always, you know, we have such a hungry young group, which I'm so fortunate to be a part of, because they want to get better. They want to get better. And somebody like him, to plug him in, that's going to give us valuable innings and then also help our youth is huge.
Okay, so Bruce said it's not our job to blow smoke, but I want to talk about a couple of the guys in the room. We talked about Garrett, and everyone knows, you know, Garrett was almost like a unicorn because of the way he performed and took the ball. I mean, I was as surprised as anyone when he was named opening day starter. And look, I'm sure he surprised you at times too throughout the year. But it wasn't just him. I mean, Eric Fetty, what you were able to do with the short time you had Eric Fetty and kind of turn his career around in his trajectory. And then you look at a guy like Jonathan Cannon, who comes up, has a couple of starts, goes back down to the minor leagues, and could have taken that one of two ways, right? Where he just kind of pouts and, well, maybe I'll get there again. He comes back up and has back-to-back starts where he absolutely shoves and shows he belongs in the majors. And even Chris Flexen to a certain extent. I know that the losses and that streak that is tied to him, it's not really his fault. I mean, that was poor team play. The bullpen let him down a few times. But if you look at the wars of a rotation that was part of a 41-121 season, do you take a step back and, like, take a 30,000-foot view of some of those guys' individual seasons and accomplishments after the season's over to be like, hey, man, look, I know the wins and losses were talked about more than they should have been, but you guys individually took major steps forward in your development, whether you're a journeyman or a guy like Garrett or Jonathan who's going to be here for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's super important, right? You got to find the wins when you're going through some stuff. Like, for these players, you know, this is a mental game, and, you know, credit to Flex. Yeah, like, it was never talked about, like, the stuff that he went through, but he gave us quality innings. You know, like, he was a staple in that rotation, to where, like, you were going to get five or six innings every single time. And, you know, was it a close game? Was it a day he struggled where he just needed to cover innings to help the bullpen out? He did it every time. And you know what? He actually got better and better as the year went on, because we asked him to make a ton of adjustments when he came to spring training to get back to where he was. You know, Cannon, he took huge steps forward, right? He went to the minor leagues. Like, hey, we got to, and this is a tribute to the work he put in the minor league guys. Like, we got to get your changeup better. Like, the vert on your changeup's higher than your sinker, which is a problem. Now, they're stacking lefties. We got to problem solve these lefties. We got to get this changeup better. And he came back with a better changeup. And, you know, so, like, when I'm coaching, like, the development and all that kind of stuff, I do try to keep things in perspective for the guys. Yeah, wins and losses, that's the outside noise. We want to win every game. That's the plan every single day. But when these guys have a great outing or they're trending in the right direction, or if we need to make adjustments, we're going to talk about it, because it is about development. And that was the biggest thing when I I was fortunate to get into the big leagues when I was at San Francisco, and it was where me and Gabe Kapler got, you know, saw eye to eye with it. It was like, all he talked about, like, hey, these guys in the big leagues, I don't care who they are, it's development. Like, you're constantly developing. And so that's for to watch these guys, you know, like Plex, like, he made huge adjustments, and he was still developing last year. You know, Cannon, huge strides, you know. And even these, some of these guys at the very end, I mean, we were really pleased with some of the stuff that we saw from the guys coming up, asking them to make adjustments. Like, Thorpe made great adjustments, you know, when he first came up. Stuff was blending. You know, maybe not problems in the minor leagues, but pitch shapes blending in the big leagues is a big problem, you know, and he was able to kind of sort through that. Then he had that nice little streak of five quality starts. So it's like, you know, when those things are going on, you know, we have a feedback loop that we give to players to make sure that they see what's trajecting in the right direction and things that they're doing really well.
Well, I'm clearing the smoke out of the room here right now because it's really nice to have somebody on that we can give compliments to. You deserve it. And the fact is, we appreciate you coming on today. Look forward to seeing you in Glendale in about 10 days. And thanks again for taking the time out.
And okay? I'll see you on Wednesday because you're our guest on the White Sox Recap podcast. So look forward to seeing you.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care.
See you guys soon.
Ethan Katz, the pitching coach of the Chicago White Sox, a lot in there. I mean, there's obviously excitement. So we're going to read. I can't see Bruce. There's so much smoke in the room right now. I thought it was cloudy, but it's just the smoke that, that the two of us were blowing.
You're very good at what you do.
I learn from the best, Bruce. You know, to be the best, you got to learn from the best. All right, we're going to reset here at the top of the hour on Inside the Clubhouse. Will Luis Robert even make the trip to Glendale? We'll discuss that and a lot more. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.